Good afternoon. Just this meeting will come to order. The clerk has taken the wrong informs me that we have a quorum present. And we have the first item we will work on the minutes. We need approval. Representative Reader moves approval of the minutes of March 14th. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor of approving the minutes of March 14th, please signify saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the minutes of March 14th are approved. We have Representative Bradley as our first bill. He's up there waiting and has been here for the last half hour because this is a very complicated bill and he wants to explain. Brought two witnesses with him, and Representative Bradley, welcome to the committee. And I see Representative Max, you're going to move this bill?
I would move the bill before the committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And the motion is it will go to the General Register if we pass the bill. Representative Bradley, 2697.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and if you would indulge, I would like to move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that we'll discuss this afternoon.
Yes, I think we should incorporate that, and I think you have an oral amendment to H2697A1.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. On line 1.2 of the A1 amendment, to insert before the word truck, fire, that would eliminate the words fire truck in the bill as it was originally drafted. And then on the amendment, further on that same line, to strike the word department. The effect of that change, that oral amendment, would be that this would apply to all emergency vehicles, that section.
Okay. All in favor of the amendment as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Representative Bradley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is another of those examples that happens probably to all of us at one time or another, where someone comes to you and brings something to your attention, and you say, oh, my goodness, I didn't know that. Well, I didn't know that people driving emergency vehicles who are wearing headsets so they can communicate by radio with each other were actually breaking the law. And they have been, as a matter of fact. And I just didn't see them out there putting out our fires and doing other things as opposed to being hauled in for breaking the law. So what this really does is to allow an exception to the current law about headsets. You also notice, by the way, that we've accommodated, and I think this sort of came to us in addition, that also to allow for the use of hearing device or hearing aid kinds of things. So just to clarify that. But the primary change really is to allow people in emergency vehicles to legally use headsets for communications. And although I don't want to make this a long time, I thought it'd be nice to have somebody who actually does it, who can sort of tell you what it looks like and how it actually works in practice. So we have Chief Marty Scherer from the diner here, and if you don't mind, him to make brief testimony to the committee.
Please welcome to the committee, Chief.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'll be very brief.
Identify yourself with the team.
I'm sorry, I'm Marty Scherer, City of Edina Fire Chief.
Okay.
Currently, the City of Edina, and I know many other fire departments, are violating current state statute by using headsets to communicate and listen to the radio in our emergency response vehicles. We do this on a daily basis, and we're not just listening to the radio, but we're also talking to each other. Oftentimes on the way to fire, when the sirens and everything are going, the officer in the vehicle is talking to the people in the back about their assignments when they get on the scene, about information they receive, and also talking to the driver about the issues, maybe traffic coming from his side of the vehicle or something like that. So they're very important and vital to actually what we do. They're large trucks, and they're loud inside, and we also wear them just to protect the hearing loss. There is significant hearing loss in many firefighters when they don't wear a headset. So it provides for safer driving, safer operations when we get there, and it's also a health issue. And as I spoke with Representative Bradley earlier, we also recommend that they include all emergency vehicles. Police also use vehicles like this now in their bomb squads, their SWAT teams, and also people that operate emergency vehicles for ambulances and EMS. Also, we use these. So I'd be glad to answer any questions if there's any.
Just out of curiosity, does this interfere with the other perceptions that are going on around you? You wouldn't be listening for sirens because you're driving alone, but is there any way that this interferes, just out of curiosity, with why we normally don't let people use headsets when they're driving?
I don't believe so. It's I've never seen any of our people use the headsets when they're not responding with the lights and siren on. They're actually not real comfortable to wear, so they always take them off when they're not responding to calls.
Okay.
So yeah, I believe they would be able to hear other vehicle sirens if they're not wearing them.
Okay. Are there any other questions, or do we need more witnesses to testify? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bradley, anybody oppose your bill, or anybody come to you concerned about the new language?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, no.
Mr. Chair, if I might add, I also talked to the President of the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association, and they also supported this bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bradley, I'm just curious if there have been, is there a history of violations that have been, or have tickets that have been issued that has brought you here today, or tell us a little bit about that.
No, I haven't heard of any. I think it's one of those cases, though, where it just makes sense and that this isn't a big deal. Have I heard of all kinds of fire chiefs been thrown in jail? No. But it does make sense for a law to match practice.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious if there were a few circumstances. It sounds like just cleaning up the law.
It would have been a lot more fun to talk about lineups of people in jail, but no.
I couldn't have imagined it, but I was curious if there had been some circumstances that brought you. But it seems like a good piece of legislation.
You want to say that?
Anybody else have a question or comment? If not, President Cox renews his motion that House File 2697 be passed as amended and moved to the General Register. All in favor of that motion, please, sir.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I just would ask the question, sort of from the comments, of whether the committee would think that this is material for a consent calendar. That's up to you all.
Well, we haven't done that for a while, so why don't we do this one? We'll do that for, if you do that for your omnibus Health Human Services Law. All right, pass as amended and move to the consent calendar. All in favor of that, please signify saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and the bill is on sale of the consent calendar. Thank you for coming in, gentlemen. Okay, next we have Representative Holbert. House File 3312.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 3312 to be considered by the committee, and it's my understanding it needs to go to public safety next.
Okay.
Would you like me to continue?
Sure.
All right. This House File 3312 brings forward additional issues. You may recall last year that we had quite a large bill having to do with federal conformity and commercial driver's license as a result of a federal audit that occurred of our practices in 2004. These four elements that are brought forward today are, again, addressing concerns that were brought forth by that audit. And what I'm going to do, I guess, at this point is turn it over to representatives from DVS to explain the bill, and we'll stand for questions.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Pat McCormick, the DVS director, and with me I have Denise Peterson, our driver services coordinator. And what we'd like to do is just walk through the bill and let you know that this bill is technical in nature. It brings us into conformity, as Representative Holberg mentioned, with federal regulations, making sure that our practices and the language in our statutes is consistent with the federal regulations. So I will let Ms. Peterson explain the bill and respond to any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The first...
You have to verify yourself in the face.
I apologize. I'm Denise Peterson with Driver and Vehicle Services.
Thank you.
Section 1 of the bill addresses just a procedural change in what the officer who stops a commercial driver is required to do upon arrest. It's removing the requirement for the officer to serve a notice of intention to disqualify at that time. That action will be taken by the department at a later time. Section 2 clarifies the term conviction for purposes of driver's license law, adding the no contest pleas and payments of fines or court costs to the definition. Section 3 clarifies the information that's required on a license. The current practice is to have the class of license endorsements and restrictions appear on the card. The federal audit raised a concern about the department's legislative authority to show that information. And Section 4 addresses driver's license cancellation based on fraudulent or incorrect information provided by an applicant. It just sets a minimum period of 60 days for the cancellation. Current practice is for the cancellation to remain in effect until the correct information is verified.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, if I might, one thing that we want to make sure in this bill is that we conform to the federal standard on the revocation, and we're not sure that the language exactly does what we need it to do, and that we want to address the need of the peace officer to provide the notification, but we do not want to change current law that would force the revocation at a 0.04 level for a commercial driver's license holder. You would see in your packet an A1 amendment that I believe was passed out, but we don't think that quite does the job, and given that we're going to public safety, we're asking for leniency here, and that we'll get the right language to conform with the federal requirement but not undo the revocation standard of the 0.04.
Governor Holberg, what did you say about 0.04? Isn't that considered revocation for commercial drivers? Or
right, the current law, at a 0.04, they lose their license. Yeah. And the concern on the federal level is with the notification of the peace officer at the time, not with that standard. And so we want to make sure that the language in the bill does not undo the 0.04 standard for revocation, but sufficiently addresses the Fed's concern of the notification by the police officer. So we don't have it quite right, but I'm for the record stating what our intent is, and given that we're going to public safety next, where they really have jurisdiction over the drunk driving standard, it seems appropriate that we could fix it there at that meeting.
How do you feel about
it? But if you'd like to see me again, you can put it on the table. We can come back here another day and fix it as well.
Well, I wasn't in on the conversation you had about the amendment that we originally had, but apparently that's not necessary. So.
And we're not sure that it accomplishes exactly what we need to, and rather than slapping it on in this committee and realizing that we have to do something different, we'd like the opportunity to take the time and make sure that we get it right.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holbrook, in public safety, if the committee or the chairman find that they do need that particular information at that time, you may be putting on an amendment?
I believe that the bill does need an amendment. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I believe the bill does need some amending, but how we go about it is still up for discussion, and we're not sure that the A1, accomplishes exactly what we need to do. And I'd like to just amend the bill once if possible.
Okay.
Are there any other questions, comments? Would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to renew my motion that House File 3312 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Finance.
And Finance, Public Safety, and what?
I think that's the technical name of the committee, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'll put a rule for it. All in favor of that motion, please stand by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. You're on your way to Public Safety.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee.
Now, is this so? Okay. Representative Steinberg.
Yes, sir.
I think you're up next. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes,
sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes,
sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
We're going to have to break for dinner.
Okay.
Maybe if it starts snowing, it'll start.
Would you like to make the motion, Representative Seibert, for House File 3521?
Yes, sir. I would like to make the motion that House File 3521 be considered and passed and referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Policy and Finance.
Okay. Now, I understand that you have an oral amendment.
Yes, sir. I have a one-word amendment. It'll be on line, page 1, line 20, in front of misdemeanor, insert the word petty.
You got that? Line 120, petty before misdemeanor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is a pretty straightforward bill. I actually submitted something, this is an agency bill, by the way. I submitted something very similar to this last year that was a lot more restrictive, actually, against drag racing and careless driving. This lessens the impact of that somewhat and is a little more broad at the same time. I have State Patrol Major Al Smith with me from State Patrol, and he's going to go ahead and read the bill. Major.
Major Smith.
Good afternoon, Chairman. My name is Al Smith. I'm a major with Minnesota State Patrol. What we're trying to do with this bill is to be proactive and to work with the cities who have already enacted ordinances within their cities similar to this. And what we're finding now as the cities enacting ordinances that these type of exhibitions are now moving out onto the highways and the roadways, both in the metropolitan area and in rural Minnesota. So we're trying to take that proactive stance so that we've got the statutes in place so that we can effectively work with and take care of this aggressive driving, drag racing, exhibition driving that's taking place on our roadways right now.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add to that there have been document cases. My local police chief of Apple Valley, he sent me in on the website where these kids are organizing these drag races in the middle of the nights
There's a street down in Apple Valley called 140th that's nice, straight, and narrow, but it is a residential street, and they've busted some kids doing some drag racing. There's been a one young man was killed on a drag race last year in Southern Dakota County. So this is not anything new. We've all heard of drag races, and, you know, a couple have been challenged to go to Airport Road, you know, at 12 midnight and see what you got under the hood. But the cars nowadays, when I was a kid, my Pinto would barely go 80. Nowadays, those cars go 120 easy. So I do believe this is needed. That's
just another reason we need some money into the transportation system so we can make those roads wider. So we
can and in consideration, see if I put heavy misdemeanor for squealing the tires. So the next time you leave the parking ramp, you're not going to get away with the misdemeanor.
Are there any other questions or comments? Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seibert, I'll confess I didn't read the bill from last year, but I don't remember it. Mm-hmm. Why, how is this less stringent? Because I'd be for stringency on this issue, so.
What I had in my bill is more so organization, so the cops can preclude something like that from happening. They can do that with this, but I also mailed not only the driver, but the person that organized the events, and also spectators. And I didn't get a hearing because that was a little too stringent.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, and maybe Officer Smith, you could address this, but I guess I'm wondering if at line 20 we have changed from misdemeanor to petty misdemeanor, given the language in lines 1.1 through 23. I guess I question whether or not there's in effect an attempt to shift the burden of proof here, the language regarding the prima facie evidence in a criminal case might have some difficulty, whereas in a petty misdemeanor, which is not a crime, wouldn't be necessarily presented with that problem. I'm just wondering if that's the reason why you're going from a misdemeanor to a petty.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this pretty much conforms with what other city ordinances are currently doing, so it would be with the same standard that the courts are now using for this type of charge. And it just makes it consistent from what we've seen looking at the other cities.
Other questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sabat, you know you're going to catch me from Representative Rukavina about this.
And that's new, huh?
I'm just forewarning you that if it gets to the House floor, Rukavina won't have a fit.
And that's new, huh?
All right. Would you like to renew your motion? I don't see any other comments, questions.
Yes, sir. I'd like to renew my motion that House File 3521 be passed.
As amended.
I'm sorry, sir?
As amended.
As amended. And sent to Public Safety, Policy, and Finance.
Okay. All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All the same sign. Motion prevails, and the 3521 is on the way to Public Safety.
Where
is it? Bruce
Springsteen has a song about
yourself.
How about on that
train?
Racing
in the street.
You know that song,
Racing in the Street?
Yeah,
that's true.
Well, we're going to be scouting for Representative Beard, who is presenting another bill at this time, so. But at the risk of not having a committee in the next 10 minutes, if we let, why don't we just take a 10-minute break here until Beard shows up.
Yeah.
commentator of the American
I mean, we could do it. He's got a couple of amendments.
I don't know if that's fair.
People
explain them.
Did he go to left side?
No. I
didn't
work on
that
at all.
I work on the crowd.
Let's see if he can come back. If he can't.
Well, we approved the strike. We didn't vote.
Yeah, I think that could be a
good thing. They're renegotiating and we're working on it. Well, the way we're working on it. A lot of farm owners doing a lot.
Well, that's fine. But let's let them go and look, and if you can come back, or if you can just sit around waiting over there. Right.
So when is your contract going to be ratified?
Well, they have to go back to the table.
Way to go.
We're in trouble. I think there's a Friday.
Did anyone ever figure out whether you can legally strike?
Well, they say you can, but
I think it's all.
This is the one that currently wants 2,000 to qualify out of the
new is it countywide?
Yeah,
it's county
Ready for the bill.
It will be a
contested.
We'll have to
approve
the bill.
What's the jurisdiction?
First Judicial District is McLeod, LeSueur, Sibley, Carver, Scott, Dakota.
It's the congressional
district. No, it's not.
It's as big as one.
Well, it's pretty big.
Yeah.
The 7th congressional district basically runs straight west from the Twin Cities up to the Dakota border and north to the Canadian border. You've got to be in 7th.
It's south. One county from the Iowa line.
Oh, I wish anybody had heard about those.
Is there an incumbent?
There's
an incumbent sitting here.
To allow these people to
live in
district judge. A million back.
No.
We should do that.
Can you campaign?
Yeah, we'll just take it out of there.
He's money and have fundraisers and hold all the way.
And so what we have to do is let's just set an even
Representative Beard with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We were the last bill, Representative Beard, and so we had to get you back from wherever you were hiding and move along. So I think that Representative Nelson is going to move your bill. Didn't you say that? You were there?
He doesn't like it. He doesn't like it.
I'll move it. That's fine. we're going to move House File 3201 to pass and be moved to the General Register. And so we have your bill before us. House File 3201.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, it's nice to be back again today. I assure you I was not hiding. I was in a very public spot taking fire from all sides. I'm glad to be here for just a moment.
So what makes you
take some more fire? We'll take plenty more fire here in a moment. Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment that needs to be offered. Actually, there's two that are a little bit of kind of cleanup things, the A06 1153 and the A1. 3201A1.
Yeah, would you like to offer A06 1153?
I'd be happy to, but I'm not an official member of the committee. I'm an ex official.
You're right. I'll offer it.
Thank you.
And this is pretty technical, I guess, in nature. We're only going to do page 2, line 11.
And Mr. Chairman,
now we finally have different information.
That's
we don't
two
need
weeks
those amendments
of
or what?
Outrage.
Okay, we don't need A06 1153.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm getting my other ear talked into while you're talking in the front one. Apparently, I'm sorry, members, the 1153, that's changed in the last few moments. The A1 does encompass both of them. If I could just move the A1.
I'll move it for you.
If you could, that would take care of the technical.
1201A1. You want to explain how that moves into your bill here and
yes.
What it does, and then we'll vote on it and get it.
Mr. Chairman, the overall bill is attempting to move some of the title and certificate issues into the 21st century with electronic transfer and so on and so forth, which means that when titles are actually terminated, there's actually a paper went out there floating around. This language within 10 days specifies very clearly how long a dealer has to actually destroy it. That wasn't in the original bill, so they ostensibly could have been destroyed immediately or whenever they got around to it. We're spelling out clearly in law, so there is no shadow of doubt that they have 10 days to do that. Also, I was told by Mr. Burris that when we're referring to the commissioner in House File 3201, we should actually define who the commissioner is that this chapter of law is referring to, and so we do define the commissioner to mean the commissioner of public safety, and that's what the technical amendment is about, members.
Are there any questions on the amendment HC201A1, as explained? If not, all in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted, and now we have the bill as amended in front of us. Representative Beard.
Members and Mr. Chairman, thank you. I was approached by the Department of Motor Vehicles to do a couple of cleanup things regarding salvage titles for, these are mostly auto dealers that are going to take it. If they bring a damaged vehicle in from out of state that already has a certified title or a salvaged marked title, and it's from Wisconsin, Iowa, wherever, they don't have to duplicate that process here. Titles that come in from out of state for whole cars, we automatically have reciprocity. Section 1 of the bill just says that if it's a salvaged title from another state, we will automatically recognize that in Minnesota. Part 2 of the bill is a surrender certificate. If there's a late model or high value vehicle that's been destroyed or damaged, and instead of being repaired and getting a salvage title, they're just going to scrap the car, they can actually do that electronically. This is the 21st century reference I made just a moment ago. And then they get to destroy the title on location. The dealer can, if they're a small mom and pop and they're not electronically connected to the Department of Vehicle Services, they can run around the corner to the courthouse or to a deputy registrar like I do when I renew my license plate, and for a fee of not more than $7, which is currently encoded in law, they can have a deputy registrar do the electronic notification. And then the third part is one that I hope to lay pretty low on, but you know we had that little scooter bill last year. There was actually, I believe it was a revisor's error, in where we said, or, we should have had the word and, which would have clarified a lot of things. You know, we got these little 10-inch bikes that go about 50 miles an hour and actually look like electronic mopeds. The way the law is written, we could actually have 12-year-olds riding those things around, and that was not our intent. The intent was 10-inch wheels and high speed falls under a section of the law that handles what we call mopeds. So there actually is a whole section of statute that describes how old you have to be and what kind of certification you have to have, wear a helmet and all that, and treat it like it's a little moped. What we're really trying to define with the motorized foot scooters is actually the small little things that just putt around the block at trotting speed. Changing the simple word or to and, which is the part, which is what Section 3 of the bill does, gets us out of a whole sticky wicket there, and so I appreciate your support. I do also have a couple members from Department of Vehicle Services that may want to speak or stand for questions, but the bill is that simple and that straightforward. Please don't recognize Mary Liz. I'm kidding.
I have a question, first of all. You said this falls, something falls under another section. What is there an age defined for these motorized foot scooters?
Mr. Chairman, yes. In the bill that we passed last year, I think we decided that to ride an electrified scooter, and that's a little thing like Spanky and our gang used to push around. Only now they have little tiny motors on the back wheel. You actually have to be 12 years old and wear a helmet.
Okay. Representative Hilbert.
Mr. Chair, if I might first ask Representative Beard if he'd like to have a hearing on his airport.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would. So I'll humbly stand for questions.
Just teasing. I'm curious if the standard for salvage is pretty even across the country. Are we going to be taking vehicles from other states that maybe have a widely different standard for salvage than what we do?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, my name is Larry Ola. I'm the Driver Vehicle Services Vehicle Services Program Director. The standard, that portion of the law isn't changing at all. Right now, if a vehicle is coming in from another state with a salvage title and it falls within the parameters of those vehicles that get salvage titles, they will continue to get a salvage title when the vehicle's retail buyer is eventually buying the vehicle. The vehicle is still going to be subject to all of the inspection requirements and affidavit requirements that are currently in the statute. The only thing that this Section 1 of the bill does is it allows dealers to take in that foreign state salvage title, and they can make reassignments to other dealers, or they can eventually sell it to a retail customer without having to first apply for a Minnesota title. Right now, the way the law stands, if that dealer purchases that vehicle, they have to apply for a Minnesota salvage title first before they can sell it to someone else.
Mr. Chair?
President Hubbard.
If I might, I don't think maybe I was clear in stating my question. I understand the process, but do other states have other standards to stamp salvage on those titles? So where there might be a very high standard for salvage in Iowa and ours is low, or is there some continuity across the country to have that stamp on title?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is no common standard throughout the country. Each state establishes its own standard, so some may be more stringent than ours, some may be less than ours.
All right, thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Representative Beard, still my friend. Section 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll use the term very loosely, do we still like that, or is it in fact really a piece of legislation where we say we passed what? Just some comment on what feedback that you've gotten, not to put you on the spot or embarrassing you, but we did have some discussion here while you're waiting for you, and a number of us did get some comments after we passed what. So please.
Just if I can just a little editorial comment about that bill and the work that went into it last time. First of all, I carried the bill as a favor to my friend Senator Murphy, who came over and we were talking about some airport issues. And he said, oh, by the way, I need somebody to carry this little bill in the House. It's a little scooter bill to bring some clarifying language to the issue. Because all across the state, this new toy that had appeared in the marketplace was giving fits to local police jurisdictions, and they were kind of making up the rules on the spot. Is it a vehicle or not? Do we arrest them? Do we impound them? Do we write them a ticket? Do we ignore them? And apparently, according to my friend Senator Murphy, some of the police union folks said, it sure would be nice if the legislature would step up and give some clarity so there's continuity all across the state in how we deal with these things. And there's several different flavors and varieties of electric scooters out there, too. Some of them are pretty sophisticated. Some of them are those little miniature crotch rockets, which I don't see how anybody can ride. And then some are just the little spanking, arguing kind of things. Well, you know what? They look like little room, and boy, there's really something. So we needed to have some clarity on what to do. And what struck, after a lot of talk between a bill Representative Kahn had, a bill Representative Hansen had, myself, Senator Murphy, and others, first of all, there was no money changed hands from any industry lobbyists. In fact, I don't think we heard from anybody in the industry. We did talk to a couple riders, and we talked to a couple of bike shops that bought and sold these things. But the industry as a whole never approached any of us about lightening up or clamping down or anything like that. However, it seemed prudent that we have some standard, and rather than make up a whole new section of law, we said these little things, like Spanky and our gang scooters, are more like bicycles than anything. Let's just let bicycle law apply, because bicycle law has been on the books for 100 years. Now, if I could undo anything, it would be this portion. If your six-year-old kid is riding his bicycle on the sidewalk, he is breaking the law. I don't know that that's wise, but rather than revisit the whole sidewalk issue in the scooter bill, we merely said bicycle laws shall apply. And oh, by the way, we tried to define how big a bike we wanted a little kid riding, and so we got into the 10-inch wheel and 15 miles an hour thing, and that's where the unfortunate word or was put in, and it should have been and we would have avoided a lot of mischief. Now, there really wasn't a lot of mischief until a couple of enterprising reporters looking for some kind of a cute story got a hold of the thing. And the next thing you know, I was doing a 20-minute taped interview with Channel 9, which 19 minutes and 30 seconds of it hit the floor. The only thing that came out was I wouldn't let my kids ride that bike there. And it just makes me crazy. And I should have known better. First of all, it was Channel 9, for one thing. I should have had a clue. Secondly, I'm in the newspaper business, or I was, and I know how reporters can get sometimes when they've already got the story written, and they love to set a testifier up and cut his legs out from under him, and that's what happened here. I'm sorry that I made you look bad in the Channel 9 interview, but I don't know that any of you would have done any better than I did, given what happened. But the fact of the matter is that you treat them like bicycles. You got to ride them within 24 inches of the curb. You got to walk them through an intersection. You can't ride them in heavy traffic. You can't ride them on the sidewalk except to get to the street or back, and so on and so forth. You ride them after dark, you got to have a reflector and a headlight, things like that. That's all that bill did. And it told police officers that if they found a herd of little kids, 8 years or up, with helmets on, riding scooters on the street, they weren't supposed to stop them, arrest them, write them tickets, and confiscate their scooters. Unless they had 10-inch wheels or bigger, were going faster than 15 miles an hour. But that's what the bill is about. So was it bad law? No. Before we passed the law, there was no law. Kids could do what they wanted, willy-nilly. We tried to bring some clarity to it. So I hope you all buck up and look the reporters in the eye and tell them it was a good bill. We brought some clarity. Now, does it need tweaked? Yeah, I think it does. And this is one of the tweakings we're doing. We're taking the little miniature high-speed things away from the 12-year-olds. But that's what this process does. I don't know what else to tell you, Representative Nelson, except it's been quite a ride.
Mr. Chairman, I want to thank Representative Beard. He's provided us yet with some more levity to this committee that sometimes gets quite dry.
I'm sorry, somebody's speaking in my clear to you, Representative Nelson. I'll take that as a compliment. There wasn't another question in there, was there?
No.
Thank you.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask the Department of Driver and Vehicle Services to explain why they proposed the change in Section 1 to not retitle salvage titles in Minnesota. And I'll tell you my perspective as an automotive recycler in Minnesota. We strongly advocate VIN retirements, and the reason for that is that there's a lot of fraud in scrap automobiles. And when you have a VIN from one state that you can take and use in another state, it helps perpetuate the fraud. And so since this is going the opposite direction of VIN retirement, I wanted to know the reason why there was the proposal. Under this proposed change, if a law enforcement official comes upon the vehicle that has a salvage title in another state, they cannot trace the ownership and the information about this car in our system. right now, the title system, through the VINs being registered, allow us to find out what's going on with the car. And so I'm concerned that if we don't have a Minnesota title, that this could make Minnesota a place where chop shops find it easier to do business.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think probably one of the driving factors on this was some comments we had heard from the industry on just getting titles out quickly enough. Fortunately, right now, our title turnaround is very quick. Probably within 6 days from the time that we received the title. Last August and September, it was not so, however. We were probably at about a two-month turnaround at that time. And really what it was doing was interfering with business when a dealership had purchased a vehicle like this. Rather than being able to reassign a title like they would in any other type of transaction, they were required to apply for a Minnesota title. And we were trying to work with the deputy registrars and with our processing people to try and get those titles to give them priority going through. But there were times when there was a significant delay in business in that sense. As far as the vehicle itself and the VIN retirement, that is correct that it would not be on our system. However, these vehicles coming in are vehicles coming in a damaged condition, and they are not getting registration generally until the retail buyer is purchasing them, because being in a damaged condition, they can't be operated. So generally, they're not going to be out on the road and available for a law enforcement official to stop because they're still in a damaged condition. This doesn't change the requirement that they would still have to be inspected and affidavits and so on filled out before they would be issued the prior salvage title.
Representative Hartman.
But just to follow up, I understand the motivation of efficiency, but I think in this case, the reason that we have a salvage title process is to be able to track these vehicles and prevent fraud. And I think that the portion of the bill, Section 2, where, you know, folks are having to do things online and destroy the titles at their place of business rather than send them into DVS, is going to speed up processing and increase efficiency. And I personally feel pretty strongly that Section 1 isn't going to add a lot to efficiency, and it may cause some adverse effects in the law enforcement end of things. So I oppose that portion of the bill.
Do we have an answer? Difference of opinion.
Mr. Chairman, I guess what I could ask is if we could learn a lesson from the scooter bill. If it is broke, and it proves to be, let's fix it again next year. But I think the department's making a reasonable request. I understand the concern, but if there seems to be some issues that come up, we'll hear about them in the next 12 months or less, and we should visit it. But
what is that seriously?
Is that 5 or 15 miles per hour? No, just kidding.
On the issue of the salvage title, I know that we have dealt with the issue of random insurance verification, and mm-hmm. we actually repealed that provision last year, and we're currently in a process of looking how we can reemploy this in an effective manner. Mm-hmm. One of the matters we're looking at is saying let's run a sample from DVS of VIN numbers, and then cross-check it against the insurance companies to see who's got and who hasn't, then go back out with notifications to those who don't. This would be problematic if there was an out-of-state VIN that wouldn't be registered via our. So would these automobiles be required to have a Minnesota license plate?
Mr. Chair, Representative, if once they get to the spot where they are issued a license plate, then they are getting onto our system. At the point they get a Minnesota license plate, yes, they would be on our system. It's the point of the reassignment between dealers when the vehicle's property is changing between dealers that registration isn't necessarily purchased. And this is only for dealers. It's not for private individuals. So a private individual would have to apply for a Minnesota title and registration. That would be on the system. These, when they get the license plate, then it would be on the system.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hartman.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm new here, so I don't have the procedures all down that well, but I do feel quite strongly about it, and perhaps I should move to delete Section 1. And if we can get some more information about that would, you know, pacify my concerns about the potential for increased fraud. But what Representative Severson brings up is, you know, we use VINs to track vehicles and identities of people purchasing them and reselling them. And my concern is not with the car that's bought. The problem is VINs get taken off cars and put on other cars. And we want to be able to find out what's going on with that VIN. So I guess I would move to delete Section 1 at this time.
So there are discussion on this? Representative Hoover.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe I'm misunderstanding here. Representative Horman, are you saying they changed the VINs on numbers that are salvaged? I mean, on cars that are salvaged?
Representative Hoover, no. What the folks who are engaged in fraud do is they buy damaged vehicles at auctions because they're cheap, and then they take the VIN number off that car, and they put it onto a stolen vehicle. And if you have the, you know, a computerized record of the VIN that was scrapped, you can look into the Minnesota title system and find out that car was scrapped, it's salvaged, it shouldn't be out there with this VIN number on it. But if you don't have that VIN number in our computer system, then it opens the door for mischief for, and there is a lot of it. There's a huge number of cars going to Mexico and to China as part of what's making steel prices so high. And I think that this particular portion of the bill raises some more complicated issues than have had time to be fully aired at this point. And so I think it would be better if it came back to us in a separate bill with a little bit more information.
Representative Beard or others?
Mr. Chairman, it sounds like it could be a rather complicated, involved process, and we do want to do good policy here. Perhaps we should accept this amendment, so I'd encourage the committee to vote it up. And then we'll move with Articles 2 and 3, Sections 2 and 3.
I'd like the motion has been made, and author concludes that we should remove Section 1 from the bill. Any other discussion on that? All in favor of motion, please signify saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? We then have the bill with Section 1, minus Section 1. And is there more discussion about that? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Beard. I can't resist the screw part of this bill. I'm glad you're clarifying it. I still have concern about the noise of these darn things. And I liked your word that you used, because I thought it was really accurate about the horde word, because you can hear these things. They're coming down the block. Sounds like some fire planes coming from a long way away and coming through the neighborhood. Maybe like weed whackers on wheels or something. But is there anything that's proposed or could be addressed to that? I'm not going to offer anything, but I sure wish you would do something on that end of it and not just... because they are quite a bit different in that sense as, than bicycles. So, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have anything in mind at the moment except local noise ordinances could be enforced, but then you're going to have all the Harley riders in your neighborhood down on your neck, too. That's a crowd I guess you don't want coming after you. 12-year-olds might be a different story, but 32-year-olds or something else.
Okay.
That's all I have to say about that.
Anything more on the bill? Questions, comments? Otherwise, I would renew my motion that House File 3201 pass as amended to the General Register.
Yes.
All in favor of that amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House File 3201 has been
members
to the General Register. Thank you.
Oh.
Again.